I remember that morning far too well. It was Wednesday, November 8th, 2016. The date may ring a bell with some of you. I was at my daughter's house staying with my grandson while she was away on business. I'd awakened to the news that Trump had been elected president. Nick left for school. I paced, cried, swore, and then I did what I do. I wrote. That morning, my writing took the form of a responsive reading that I submitted to Worship Web, titled Standing on the Side of Love. Someone from Worship Web, since it was quite timely, someone from Worship Web got back to me quickly with a request that I change the title and the responsive part to Answering the Call of Love, per Jason Shelton's request and authorization of that same change in the hymn on which I had based it. I was more than happy to do so. More recently, as my understanding has both broadened and deepened, I wish I had included in that litany of things something to the effect of, in the face of ableism, we answer the call of inclusion. Because that incident brought the centering of able-bodiedness in our culture and in our denomination, and the need for ever greater inclusion to my attention in a way that I hadn't been quite aware of before. And there's been concern among the Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association itself for a good number of years about accessibility issues at local chapter national events, accessibility in terms of such things as wheelchair access in facilities, hearing support, support for visually impaired members, and support for people with those disabilities that are reading referred to that maybe aren't as obvious, sensitivities and food sensitivities and those kinds of things. So that had been around for a while. If it were a problem with only the Ministers Association, it wouldn't warrant a sermon, but it's not. It's a problem within local congregations. It's a problem in our entire culture. In a way analogous to how binary, heterosexuality, whiteness, youth, non-immigrant status are centered and implicitly thought of as normal in our culture, so is what we define as able-bodiedness. Ableism, according to the Reverend Teresa Inez Soto, ableism is the centering of able bodies and experiences over disabled bodies and experiences, which leads to the devaluing and actually ultimately to kind of erasing of those disabled bodies. It leads to discrimination and it leads to the exclusion of individuals with mental and physical disabilities from full participation in the available community options available to other people, things like employment, housing, recreational opportunities. It's sometimes all too explicit and frequently implicit. Variations in how our minds and bodies work are part of the vast range of human diversity and contribute to individual uniqueness. At any given time and in any given culture, it's the dominant society, as it is with other forms of discrimination, the dominant society determines which of these variations are considered normal or typical and defines the rest as disabilities. The Reverend Bill Gaventa is chair of the National Collaborative on Faith and Disability and director of the Summer Institute on Theology and Disability. He also has a new book out, which I'll refer to in a minute here, but What he points out is that the medical model, there's a medical model of disability that has dominated the field for quite some time, and it begins with the premise that disability is abnormal. It is seen as disabilities are seen either as diseases or disorders or as chronic health conditions. And that model still certainly functional as well. But more recently, there's been another model, which he labels the social model, that has been introduced. It takes account of more voices, and it's more recent, it's broader, including those of the voices of the social scientists and of the humanities. And it focuses on disability as, quoting Gaventa here, the outcome of disabling environments, attitudes, values, and cultural prejudice, rather than as a medical condition. I want to focus on that first clause, the outcome of disabling environments. In other words, the disability was not that when Tom and I were driving back from Florida this past March, I needed a walker to get around because I'd injured myself in a fall. The disability was that the configuration of most restroom doors in most public rest areas along the interstate was such that it was very, very hard for me to maneuver the walker through it. Trust me, that experience gave me a whole new take on the saying about don't let the door hit you in the butt on the way out, because it did. And that's only one of several examples. I lived with that for a few weeks. Many people live with that a lot longer and more. There are abundant resources within humankind's faith and religious traditions for, and humanism as well, for addressing some of these issues. There's an old train of thought that we're not even going to dignify by talking about very much about how disabilities are God's punishment for sin, and we're just going to let that one go away. But there are more and better traditions, and as a recent kind of working paper from the UU Ministers Association cites, there's a couple at least in our own tradition that are extremely helpful. One is the principle. If we believe that all people have inherent worth and dignity, if we believe that all people have inherent worth and dignity, then we believe that all bodies have inherent worth and dignity. Then all bodies are deserving of our care, our respect, our concern, because they are human people with human bodies. This applies even to those bodies that do not and cannot conform to whatever cultural standards are operative at the moment. I'd add to this, they focused on, a little bit in their report, they tended to focus on the physical. I would add that the same applies to all minds and personalities, explicitly including those whose challenges are mental and behavioral more than physical. The second resource that they cite is the source. It says that we believe one of the sources of our living tradition is direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of spirit and an openness to the forces which uphold and create and uphold life, which calls us then to resist this devaluing of human bodies, of disabled bodies. Disabled bodies are part of life and contained within that transcendent whole. From a theistic perspective, all are part of the original goodness of creation. This variability invites us into a deeper experience of life's inscrutable mysteries. Other religious traditions offer similar resources. Many Christians see the image of God in everyone. In a similar vein, there's a Jewish saying from the Middle Ages that goes, in front of every person, there is a host of angels saying, make way for the image of God. Most Buddhists believe that everyone either is or has, depending on which Buddhist you're talking to, everyone either is or has Buddha nature. I recently came across a reference to a Hindu goddess that I had not run across before. Akhilandeshvari is the goddess, I worked on that one, is the goddess who is never not broken. Goddess who is never not broken. She is certainly a lesser known Hindu deity, but one whose story and way of being I think can be very helpful. Some Hindus regard her as one of several manifestations of Shakti, the female power of the universe. As such, she is identical with the divine in its transcendent form, the ground and source of all that is. Part of what she teaches us is that wholeness and brokenness are simply our human designations. She reminds us, as we are learning with so many other things, gender identity, race, ethnicity, immigrant status, to name but a few, our world is not composed of binaries, nor are we. It's much more complex and diverse than that. Most of us are not one or the other, but some more subtle blend of any collection of different elements. Some more overt, some not. And that configuration can shift over time and circumstance. Different stages of our lives find us at different places along that continuum. When I first came to Ball State, Rich Harris headed up the office, the name of which I do not recall right now, that provided assistance to disabled students in the language of that day. I once heard Rich remark that we're all TABS, T-A-B-S, temporarily able-bodied. When I look over my own life, I'm struck by the perceptiveness and implications of his remark and the implications of it for how we practice being an inclusive community. Frequently, considerations of spirituality and religion in the face of disability arise out of situations that involve life and death issues, health crises, accidents, chronic diseases, illnesses. In other words, people come face to face with limitation and disability and vulnerability. The everyday habits and illusions that we may have used to avoid the pressing existential questions that hover around the edges of our lives are stripped away, sometimes suddenly, sometimes in a process of slow erosion. However it happens, there the questions are, in all their bare ferocity. Our spiritual or religious beliefs, our basic confidence in the goodness of life itself may be battered in a storm of anger, lament, despair, and meaninglessness. In Arthur Frank's second book titled The Wounded Storyteller, he suggests that there are two narratives about disease, illness, and disability, and these two coexist in some sort of uneasy relationship. One is the more valued narrative of cure, a return to one's former state of health. While he doesn't mention it here, I would also include, while he doesn't mention it, I would include here what I've heard called disability porn or inspiration porn. An emphasis on people with disabilities who nonetheless manage, listen to my language, who nonetheless manage to somehow accomplish outstanding feats of prowess in some areas. Invariably, it entails one, objectification, and two, that sense of in spite of. But the other narrative that's very much out there, but often hidden, often submerged, is a narrative of chaos, of having one's sense of community, meaning, identity, worthiness, shattered and left in pieces. In the face of these two, he posits a third way that he labels journey. After an initial crisis, the affected person and their families and friends may begin a journey of accommodation, adaptation, and perhaps transformation that can lead to a renewed sense of identity beyond the divide of before and after. There is a new normal, and it is good. Different, but good. In this context, and here's where religious and spiritual communities come in this context, deep needs for belonging emerge. Hungers that can be assuaged only by inclusion in genuine community. One of the insights that I have gained, at any rate, from Brené Brown's work is that fitting in and belonging are not the same thing. Fitting in, she writes, is about assessing a situation, then becoming who you need to be in order to be accepted. Becoming who you need to be in order to be accepted. Belonging, on the other hand, she continues, doesn't require us to change who we are. It requires us to be who we are. Fitting in is thus, in fact, it becomes a barrier to genuine belonging and the deep healing it can bring, because we're not showing up with who we really are. She relates an answer given by an eighth grader when asked the difference between fitting in and belonging. The young person replied, "Belonging is being accepted for you. Fitting in is being accepted for being like everyone else." Two very perceptive sentences. Clearly, this is not an issue for people defined as having disabilities. It's a central issue as we all seek to build community together, to extend the reach of inclusion in a world in which community seems increasingly difficult to realize. We're more likely to judge difference than to appreciate the diversity of humankind and the myriad ways of exploring and describing who we are and what is fundamental to all of us. All of us need and yearn for true acceptance and for genuine belonging. This locates how we respond to disability firmly within the context of the call to extend the beloved community to every person. Gaventa puts it well in the title that he gives to the conclusion of his book, Disability and Spirituality. The title to that conclusion is Recovering Wholeness. It is about all of us. And indeed it is. We're all in this together. May it be so.